Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all these skills to address the subjects that we all grapple with in this conversation with a reluctant therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Hey, Tyler. And today the focus is on the mom of wife, mother, grandmother. Definitely of the mother. Because, you know, Sunday is Mother's Day, the second Tuesday, the second Sunday of May. So I hope you have something wonderful planned for your mom.
I'm so glad that you sent out that promo to me earlier today.
Oh, really?
Because it reminded me it was Mother's Day and I already got my mother her present.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I got, This is not underwriting. This is just something that I found. It's a website called Storyworth, and you basically sign your mother up, and then it sends every week your mother like a prompt for a story, and so she writes down her stories, and at the year it binds them all into a book.
Oh,
so
that's a cool idea.
And it asks like questions that you might not think to ask your mom, like who was your first crush or what was your first job or
all
different things.
Yeah, that's fantastic. What a great idea.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that.
I like that. Well done. And your mom can thank me for her present.
Yeah, absolutely.
At the end of the week. Oh, my goodness. Or at the end of the year.
Well, what's on your mind today?
Well, so Mother's Day is part of it. And I actually have a couple of thoughts about motherhood as we come up to this historic annual event. And I know I'm going to sound a little cynical, and I'm going to own it. That's okay. But I just hear me out, because I have a couple thoughts that I want to run by you today, and I want to see where we go with this conversation. The first thought is whether or not having this day dedicated to honoring mothers is really in the best interest of the women who are dedicating their lives to that role of mother, or if actually having Mother's Day contributes to this ongoing devaluation of the work mothers do in caring for families, children, the elderly, taking care of the home, all that women do, which supports the overall success of not only the economy of the family, but the economy of the nation. Because capitalism unto itself couldn't exist if there wasn't a lot of free labor done by 95% women to care for the home and care for children and care for the elderly and the sick. And so when I think about Mother's Day, it seems like it's another one of those appreciation days for those who work, for those whose work is undervalued and underpaid, kind of like Teacher Appreciation Day, which happens to be today, ironically enough. And then there's, you know, Secretary Day. But think about all these appreciation days. You know, Teacher Appreciation Day is wonderful. I got a couple cards. That's nice. An apple here or there. You know, a little thanks for your hard work. But you don't see a Principal Appreciation Day or a CEO Appreciation Day or a Lawyer Appreciation Day, right? Those careers and those avocations that are fairly compensated or highly compensated, they don't need a day of flowers and a lunch out with the gang, because they are getting remunerated for the effort they put in. But for, you know, mothers and for secretaries and for teachers, it's as if there's this like secret wink wink. We know that you're really not valued in society overall, but our entire world would collapse without you. And so here's a bouquet of flowers, some chocolate, and lunch at Panera in appreciation.
That was very specific.
And it's not that I got those things. But, I mean, think about that. To me, it's like this horrifying default thing, because families would not work. The world would not work. Our education system would not work. Companies would not work without primarily women who are in these positions. Not that men don't do these jobs. And I don't want this to become a us versus them. And what about all the men that are doing the work? I don't want to get lost in that. Today, I'm sticking with mothers. We're going to give mothers their full due and the work that women do. Okay.
Okay.
We're staying with that. And 95% of the caregiving work is done by women. And the teaching positions today are primarily women. Psychotherapy today is primarily done by women, the lower end paid of psychotherapy. I have found myself in all underpaid and undervalued positions in my life. But the reason that I stay with it, and a lot of people do, is because we happen to be in positions that people consider work that people do for the love of the work. And for some reason, if you love what you're doing, if you're doing it out of love, I love my children, I love my husband, I love my family, I love my work as a homemaker. You know, I love my students, I love seeing them grow and thrive, so I love my work. And I love coming here every Tuesday and being a part of this community. So because by default that I love all of this work, I am then supposed to do it all for free or for a very low wage, because I'm getting apparently all of the compensation I need from my heart feeling full. And so when it comes to Mother's Day, and I'm not saying let's boycott Mother's Day at all. I'm also not saying that. I don't want people to start to feel defensive, because I certainly am looking forward to my foot rub and my pedicure and whatever meal my children, you know, bring to me. I love all that. And I treasure every card and every homemade gift they've ever given me. I love that. So no boycotts. And you don't get to cancel your mom's gift, Tyler.
Oh, absolutely not.
No boycotts. But I think we need to discuss, and that's what I want to do today, discuss how do we elevate the status of mothers in every aspect so that women and children and society can benefit. You know, because the highest rate of poverty lies on women and children. You know, we're esteeming these mothers, these sainted mothers, and yet the highest rate of poverty are mothers with children. And so if we really are going to honor women, instead of just every, you know, the second Sunday of May, let's talk about a wage for homemakers. A wage for homemakers. Because I have thought about that a lot over the years. You know, I don't know if you know this, but I consider myself, my primary job is my family, caring for my family, homemaker. I'm a wife and a mom. That's why I talk about those things first. And then my hobby energy is everything else, doing the radio show, teaching at Cal Poly, you know, whatever other work that I do is kind of hobby energy, makes it fun. But my primary responsibility is the caring for my family. And I'm fine with that. But it occurred to me very late into my life of caring for my family. And I always had part-time work. I had my hobby energy work. So I had a little extra money to contribute to the family. But at some point, it occurred to me that I wasn't earning Social Security like my husband was for his full-time work. And it started to really bother me, because my family wouldn't run without me doing the work that I do. And as I said before, society wouldn't run without women doing the work that they do. And why is it? And as a society, we talk about the virtue of family, and that we're all about family values, and that family is the foundation of society, that people do better mentally, physically, emotionally when they're in the cradle of family. And a family doesn't exist unless someone rocks that cradle. Then why then, if it's so essential to the economy and well-being of our nation, aren't the people who are doing that work compensated with a wage? That's just my first thought on Mother's Day. My other thought is about Mother's Day is how all of these kind of sappy, flowery, sentimental cards that get sent out talking about how our children are who they are because of us, because of their moms, as lovely as those thoughts are, in my head, it really perpetrates this ideal of the sainted mother who sacrifices all of herself for the betterment of her children. And she does this, one, out of love, goes back to that love, that drive to nurture. We make these humans. We are filled with these hormones that cause us to bond and want to care for them. So it's biologically there. But there's also that societal expectation that mothers are going to put all of their needs aside and be perfect for their children. And this pressure to be perfect for women causes a lot of stress. You know, no one is perfect, and no one should be expected to be perfect. But when it comes to mothers, the expectation is that women are going to rise above all of their own desires and wishes and experiences and failings and become somehow perfect. And it's damaging to all of our collective mental health and well-being. One, it drives mothers to exhaustion and drives them to despair. Because if you're thinking that your job is to meet every need of your family, and you are going to inevitably fail at that because no one can meet every need of their family. And so you constantly live with this idea that you're failing at your job, failing at that thing you love, and that eats away at you and makes you feel anxious or depressed or overwhelmed. The idealized mom also creates competition between women, right? Because then you're saying, I want to be the best mom. We start posting pictures of our, you know, handmade hummus that we made, or setting up the perfect baby room, you know, or the competition between who's, you know, working part-time and then, you know, home with their children, or who's working full-time but has the perfect setup. It's constant competition out of fear of looking like you're not the perfect mom. So instead of being there to support each other, it sets up this competition, and it contributes, you know, overall to the breeding of kind of bratty, self-centered, entitled adult children. Because if we sacrifice our entire being to try to meet every need of our children, and we never put them in a position of trying, of leaning on their own abilities, learning coping skills, being disappointed and frustrated and overcoming that and developing resilience, which is really our ultimate job as parents, is to prepare our children to go out and then themselves become thriving adults, we're setting up this really bad picture for our children once they grow. So in some ways, if you meet the idealized standard of the perfect mother, you've inadvertently, in a lot of ways, wrecked your kid in the long run. And you may get a lot of great cards, and there may be people that feel envious of you, and you look like you're magic, and you have a halo above you, but it doesn't serve the very people that you're trying to care for. Caretaking is draining. I don't know if you've ever been a full-time caretaker for anyone, you know, it's a draining job. And even though you do it out of love, whether it's for a young child or an elder person, it takes everything you have to do it well. And motherhood, frankly, is a job. When I got married and we decided to have children, that was my labor for the family. That was the job I was going to do. And my husband was going to do the, you know, resource work. And that's why when we talk about families, we talk about the resource worker and the emotion worker, and that it takes both to make sure a family runs. You know, we talked about that, but my job as a mother, like all jobs, has highs and lows. You know, there are times when it's overwhelming. It's times when it sucks, and I don't want to be that go-to person for everyone else's independent needs and individual needs. But we still try to live up to that expectation, unlike someone who's in a paid wage position where they can call in sick or kind of hide out in their cubicle or, you know, take some personal time. Mothers don't have that in our job description. But we have lows as moms, and probably fathers too, but as I said, I'm sticking to moms today. And we have our lows. And I think if we didn't feel so judged or competitive with each other, or afraid that if we admit that we have low lows and parts of motherhood that we don't like, if we admitted it out loud, that we'd be singled out as the only person who has those thoughts. And so today I thought the other piece of this conversation, one would be, let's talk about wages for homemakers. And let's talk about the truth of motherhood, true confessions. You know, if you were to be honest, what has been difficult? What are some times that you really haven't loved what was going on? How have you maybe cheated the system a bit? There was a website called True Confessions for Mom and Moms, and it was women who were posting all the things that they did and they were kind of embarrassed of, but they did to survive. And one of the women posted that she never taught her children to read the clock to tell time when they're little, because she wanted to be able to put them to bed whenever she decided it was bedtime. And so she didn't want them to be able to question her. So that's real moms, That's the motherhood I'm talking about. That's the one I experienced. And fortunately, I had a few friends that we could admit to each other the things that we were doing that we weren't fully proud of, but that helped us survive. And so I want to open up the phones today and ask for your mom confessions. Let you unburden yourself of some of those ways that mothering wasn't what you expected, or you maybe didn't mother up to the standards you had for yourself. And then we'll also be talking about this idea of a homemaker's wage. So I'll tell you my first truth. I have a lot. I have a lot of confessions, but I don't want to make it all about all the ways I maybe sucked as a mom. But here's my first truth. I didn't take my children to the park because it was great for them to be outdoors, although that was a side benefit of them being outdoors and getting to play. I took them out to the park, one, so I could read my magazines in peace, and two, so that they would burn off all of their extra energy and be exhausted so I could put them down to bed early.
I'm thinking about all the times my parents insisted that I play outside as a kid, and it wasn't so I would get fresh air, it's so the house would be quiet.
Exactly. You see, I don't think that's such a horrible truth to admit. And I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And so today we're talking about the real side of motherhood, the part we don't talk about, the part that isn't written on our Mother's Day cards, and also about this idea of motherhood as a job, as a part of the economy, and should it be counted into the GDP, and should there be a wage for homemakers? You can be part of the conversation by giving us a call at 805-781-3875. You can also find out more about the show on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. I post show updates every week. You can find previous shows at kcbx.org. Tyler gets them posted immediately week after week, so you can check them out there. Or if you'd like to podcast and listen at your own convenience, you can find us through Apple Podcasts, Conversation with The Reluctant Therapist. And if you'd like to get in touch with me, you can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be back in a moment to take your calls. Oh, I think Tyler's on the phone, so we didn't get to grab the cue. We'll be back in a moment to take your calls.
Welcome to the end of being alone inside your mind. You're tethered to another, and you worry it all the time. You always knew the melody, but you never heard it rhyme. She's fair and she is quiet, Lord, she doesn't look like me. She made me love the morning, she's a holiday at sea. The New York streets are as busy as they always used to be. But I am the mother of Evangeline. The first things that she took from me were selfishness and sleep.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And that was Brandi Carlile, The Mother. It's really a beautiful song. I'm kind of setting the tone for today. And again, I'm not trying to be cynical. You know, I know it can sound a bit cynical to say, hey, why do we have Mother's Day? And isn't Mother's Day just another way of saying, I know we don't really value everything you do and that our lives would come to an end without you, and here's a bouquet of flowers. I know that sounds cynical. I think it's important to have this time to say thank you and honor the people that we care about in every way. But I also think that having this one day doesn't take us off the hook for all the ways that mothers and motherhood have been devalued in society, and we need to start rethinking that. And it's not that this is the first time that this idea has come up. I'm not the one who is spearheading the idea of wages for housework. The wages for housework idea came up early in the 20th century, and it was first brought up by Crystal Eastman at the First Feminist Congress in 1919, and she called for a generous endowment of motherhood provided by legislation for the work that was done by women, because housework is a fundamental aspect of society, and the care and feeding and tending of the family wouldn't happen without the women. And then this idea was brought up again during the second wave of feminism in 1972. Sylvia Federici and Selma Jones, they came together and created the International Feminist Collective. And Selma James was a full-time housewife, and she started looking at how the division of labor after the 20th, after the Industrial Revolution, really kind of separated and made a hierarchy out of the wage earners in society. That for the first time, masses of men were leaving family farms and going into work in manufacturing plants, and women were left at home tending to the home, the hearth, and the children. And so it kind of separated the division of labor for the first time. And then slowly over the course of time, we started to see that the wage earners outside of the homes' work started to become more valued than the wages or the work that was done by women at home. This idea of a homemaker's wage picked up some traction, but then hit some roadblocks against feminists who felt that by having a homemaker's wage, it tied women eternally to the drudgeries of homemaking, which is a whole nother conversation about the conflict between different parts of the feminist movement, where the one portion of the movement really wanted to make space for women within the workplace, have women have opportunities in education, have reproductive freedom, you know, have choices in their lives. But there was a whole other segment of the feminist movement that didn't get a lot of traction, which were women who were stay-at-home homemakers who valued their work and their contribution to society and loved what they were doing, but wanted to be valued and compensated and recognized for what they did. And remember, it's not just motherhood that we're talking about. When we talk about wages for homemakers, it's caring for children, but it's also caring for the elderly. 95% of care for the elderly falls on the eldest adult child, female child in a family. So the caregiving work falls on women for children and for the elderly, which means they're taken out of the workforce during those periods of time doing work that is essential. But how do we compensate them? How do we, you know, make sure that we're supporting the work that they do so that women and children don't fall beneath the poverty line? What do you think about that? 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of the conversation today. Hi, Lionel, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Well, I kind of have a social liberal, and when I got out of the Army, I walked the picket line for the NAACP in Berkeley, California, and Oakland, California, because they were not given their equal rights, and I was part of the anti-war movement, even though I was an ex-GI. But women's rights have come home to me in a very big way recently because my wife passed away on March 23rd.
I'm so sorry.
So now I've had to kind of take care of my outside affairs as much as I can. Also take care of this big house by myself. Mm-hmm. Now, July 1st, my son-in-law is moving in here with his wife and baby daughter. But I just am impressed with how much work it is that I didn't appreciate before. Mm-hmm. It's constant.
Yes.
It's just a house with no people, an empty house, you know, with me. And I make a mess in the bedroom, and then I try and make the bed and stuff like that. But this house is a thing of beauty, and it also struck me that women, you know, create a work of art with their home mm-hmm. that wouldn't be there at most, you know, just it was up to the man. And that there's so much we take for granted because women do it silently. They just do it. They just dust and sweep, and they're just always kind of moving. And especially a lot of women work now, and hopefully their young husbands are helping them. But I don't think it's natural for a man to try and do that. His career is outside. He thinks outside. Mm-hmm. Whereas women, that's their crowning art achievement, is first their home and second their children and third the grandchildren, you know, and they have a tremendous love for that and a tremendous artistry in the way that all happens. And I just think they should get paid for it. I mean, I think there should be some. I mean, what I'm a retired iron worker. Every day I worked, I got paid Social Security benefit. I mean, you know, I paid into the Social Security fund, and now I'm receiving it as well as the iron worker pension. But what is there for women? Nothing. They're left just thrown to the wolves if the husband dies. They might get half the Social Security pension or something like that, but it's not much. And we need to, I guess, follow the Swedes who have better situations. I don't know. What do you think? What can we do?
Well, Lionel, thank you for sharing your story. And I think it's beautiful that you're going to be sharing your home multi-generationally with your son-in-law and grandchild. I hope it works beautifully. And I hope you continue enjoying the art of the homemaking piece, because I loved how you talked about, you know, there is this, last week we talked about beauty and how, you know, we crave beauty in our lives, and creating a home that is beautiful and a sanctuary helps our mental health and well-being. And for most women, mostly women, there are men who do this, but mostly it's the women's work, as you mentioned, to be home and creating the sanctuary that everyone loves to come to. And it sets this tone of peace and beauty for the family. But I think what you're experiencing is something that if more men could experience, they would be excited about the idea of a wage for homemakers. There actually might be more men who would say, I'll take that homemaker job. I'm the one who's the artist in the family of creating the space of beauty. And how would that work? And so thank you for asking about the actual details. And one of the models for this is actually Venezuela, surprisingly enough. In 2004, there was a women's revolution in Venezuela, and they made a change to their constitution to recognize the contributions of women. So in 2004, they added to the constitution to recognize the homemaker as an economic, the home as an economic activity. So they wanted to recognize that the working of the home, the economy of the home, is part of the overall economic activity of the country of Venezuela. They enshrined stay-at-home motherhood as an occupation in its constitution, which now entitles wives to wages and Social Security. So it's already been happening for over a decade. Now, the difficult part is that Venezuela is struggling in so many ways economically and just in politically, but the fact that they've kind of made these steps towards trying to esteem the work of women is a great model to follow. And then there has been some traction in the United States and in the United Kingdom for a program called UBI, which is Unconditional Basic Income. And the way I understand it, it would replace a lot of the welfare programs, the social welfare programs, but it would become more of this unilateral or this opportunity to support the economy of women and children. And the idea behind it, and I don't know what the number is, but I saw one statistic that said it would be $10,000 that would be given in a lump sum to help aid the family system, which is interesting. So if I look back over my lifetime with my husband, and, you know, we made economic sacrifices to have me be the primary caregiver at home because life got more and more expensive every decade, but we wanted to stay with this plan. So economically, we did struggle. And that $10,000 was about how much we struggled every year without me having a full-time income. So that number is interesting. But the UBI is not directly towards wives, but it actually would be available to stay-at-home parents of any gender or socioeconomic group. So instead of having like a wage-attached welfare program, there would be this benefit for any stay-at-home parent of any socioeconomic group to apply for this UBI, unconditional basic income, which would be theirs all the years that they're home with kids. So that's a start. The two are a start. But I think I like the Venezuelan idea better of actually just recognizing the work of caring for the home as part of the economy. Because Tyler, here's something that you may or may not know that I learned a few years ago, because we did a show about economics, home economics, and my argument of why we should bring home economics back into the school system, because it's kind of that primary tool for helping people learn how to have social relationships. That show's there if you'd like to go back and listen to it. But from that show, I looked at the origin of the word economy. Do Do you know what it is?
I do have no idea.
Okay. The origin of the word economy is derived from a Greek word, oikonomia. I'm probably pronouncing it incorrectly, but oikonomia, which means household management or management of house affairs. And it describes how people earn income and resources and how they spend them on necessities and luxuries. So the original idea of our economy arose out of how we manage our family system. And so that unto itself should be argument enough for bringing the work of women into the gross domestic product and start counting it as part of our gross domestic product, and then recognizing the value of this work and providing a wage. There was a Forbes study that was done a few years back, and they looked at the value of household production, the caregiving, you know, watching over children, doing the housework and the maintenance of the home. And they found that if we started to count that work that's undocumented now, unrecognized, it would account for $3.8 trillion per year, which would bump our GDP, our gross domestic product, up by 26%. So if you don't care at all about the social aspects of the mental health and well-being of people who are compensated for their work and feel valued and are able to provide for their family, if you just are all about the dollars, then looking at a bump of 26% in the GDP is financially beneficial for society as a whole.
Huh.
I know. Hmm. And the argument goes further, because if you look at kind of the breakdown of gender spending and how money is allocated, they found that in communities, you know, women by nature become more sacrificial when they are raising their children or caring for children, you know, in times of social need, wartime, poverty, drought. You know, when people are fundamentally struggling, you'll see women go without food or go without their own basic necessities to make sure their children are cared for. And this is seen over and over again in studies. And they also found that in micro financing projects, when the money was loaned primarily to women, that women, one, were more readily able to pay it back, but that they took that income and utilized it to benefit the family and the overall economy of the society. Whereas when microfinancing went primarily to men, it would line the pockets of the individual or the external of the family. So there's these two arguments that, but women, when put in a position of having money to distribute, utilize that money to care for their family and not just lift up their family as a whole, but also lift up other families and other households. So those are in some ways feminist arguments, and there's some way Mother's Day arguments. Like for Mother's Day, why not make a few loans to Kiva, which is an organization that does microfinancing in your mother's name? Because when you finance a household for an underprivileged or a economically struggling mother, they tend to better the lives of many and not just one.
And go ahead and just explain a little bit. What does microfinancing mean?
Microfinancing means individuals like myself or yourself, loaning $25, $50, I mean, not large amounts,
okay,
to fund businesses. So I've microfinanced a few different women in different countries, as much as trying to buy a cow so they have an opportunity to get milk that they can sell to other communities. Another one, microfinanced to get seeds to grow crops that they'd have for their family and also to sell. And I did small, $25, I think, a few times over, and they've all been paid back, and then I recycle them into other loans.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it really is. If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. And today our topic is Mother's Day. I know it may not sound like flowers and roses and dear old mom. And usually I would open up the phone lines and say, let's give tribute to all the amazing things our mothers do. And I'd be okay to hear a few of those. But what I'd really like to talk about today is that the shadow side of motherhood, the part that we don't talk about a lot, because we're really afraid to admit that motherhood is hard and that a lot of us are not really reaching our full intended capacity at all times, that we do the best we can, but we're probably always falling short in some ways, but we're embarrassed or afraid or ashamed to say it because it looks like everyone else is doing so well, that they're, you know, hand making organic clothes for their children or making sure that they're in the best schools. You know, there's a lot of competition out there. And so I'm curious today to know how you feel about your work as a mother. Do you feel like you're valued? Do you feel like you're living up to what your hopes were? Is the job what you hoped it would be? Because in all honesty, I spent a good deal of my time when I was full-time parenting, when my kids were little, feeling this low-level sense of depression, just like this low-level sense of not quite okay. Loved what I did, wouldn't have changed it for the world, wanted to be home with my children more than anything, but like any job, it was taxing. And because it's 24/7 and there are no vacations or holidays, it really starts to wear on you, even though you love it. And so how do we balance those two? I'd love to hear your thoughts on this and the idea of a wage for homemakers. Would you stay home if there was a wage, if you knew that you would be compensated for your work? Our number is 805-781-3875. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back to take your calls.
Might have a mom, she might be the bomb, but ain't nobody got a mom like mine. Her love's till the end, she's my best friend. Ain't nobody got a mom like mine. She's my world, she's my heart.
That's Meghan Trainor, all about the mom. Today is Mother. Well, we're talking about Mother's Day. It's actually also Teacher Appreciation Day. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. Our number is 805-781-3875. We'd love to hear from you today on either of these topics. What do you feel about this work as a mother? Do you feel like you're meeting your expectations or your own standards, or do you feel like you're falling a little short? And what about this idea of the good enough mother? You know, there was a British pediatrician who coined the term good enough mother. His name was Winnicott. And he described the work of a mother as kind of slowly launching the child from her full-time care to help the child grow into an independent, successful, and thriving adult. That the idea was that when children are first born, when they're infants, rightly so, mothers devote all of their time 24/7 to caring for that infant, meeting all of their needs when they can, you know, on the spot, giving up their own sleep and their own freedom to be there for the infant. But then the idea, according to Winnicott, was that as the infant grows, as the child ages, that the mother doesn't jump in right away and meet every need in that second and gives the child some time to kind of sit with that idea that they're external from the mother, to deal with that frustration a little bit, to start feeling the discomfort and finding ways to grow resilience and build their own confidence and start to problem solve on their own. And the idea that the good enough mother allows the child space to develop their own resources and not always be dependent on the mom. And we see that in a society that really idealizes the sainted mother as the woman who sacrifices her entire being for the betterment of her children. But ultimately, in the end, can hobble their children from being able to develop into their own fully thriving and expressive adult. And if you model the sainted motherhood, who makes no errors, who never feels frustrated, who doesn't always meet the standards that they wanted to, your own children may suffer when they realize they can't meet all of the needs of their child and wonder how you did that. So for our own children, it's important for them to see that this is a job, that it's tough, that it's a lot of work, that it has a ton of perks, but that ultimately we're human and that we struggle, so that when my daughter, who is a mother now, is struggling to get out the door and keep the house together and do her full-time job and be the best mom she can. I want her to know that if she's falling short, that's okay. That hopefully we are doing our best more often than we're doing our worst, and sometimes that's the best we can hope for. 805-781-3875 is our number. Hi, Jamie, you're on the air.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi.
I am the local San Luis Obispo County Postpartum Support International Coordinator, so this is a topic that's near and dear to my heart. And I just want to echo what you've said about the difficulty of motherhood, how we're trained by Postpartum Support International to share with any mom that emails me or dad that calls me. The thing that I am trained to say is, you are not alone, you are not to blame, and with help you will be well. And I found in my own journey that all three of those things were true, even in the happiest city in North America.
Well, and I'm you know, glad that those resources are out there, because I think there is a lot of shame for women when they feel like they have their own personal expectation. And, you know, for women who feel like, I'm going to stay home with my children, and they confuse that stay home with their children with, I'm going to never leave my child's side at all, that makes the work more challenging. Because the idea of the stay-at-home parent is not that you are their 24-hour caregiver at all times. It means you are responsible for the rearing of that child and making sure they have play dates and social exposure and opportunities, but it's not being hooked to them 24/7. And conversely, you know, one of my concerns, if we're talking about postpartum depression, is part of the thing that has driven a lot of postpartum experiences is this story we've told women that you can have a child and return to work in 6 weeks and go back to the way things were. And that's a fallacy and a myth. And that's driving a lot of women's mood disorders. It's not biological. It's situational.
Interestingly, for me, the situation was different. My impetus was to stay home with my son, and because my mom had done that, and I had been taught from an early age that that is how a good mother behaves. And, I mean, we sold our home so that we could rent, so that I could stay home, and so that we could afford, you know, everything around our lives was centered on me staying home, and that was a real recipe for disaster. So, it really doesn't look any one certain way, and I think that we have such high expectations of ourselves as women first, but then also as mothers, and like you said, that mother as saint role is really overplayed.
Yes, it's an unrealistic expectation that has been passed down from generation to generation. And it's interesting because I think about my own relationship with my mom and how frustrated I felt at times when she didn't live up to what I hoped she would be as my mother, my hopes for my idealized mom, and how it wasn't until I was a mother on my own and years into my motherhood that I realized, wow. Given, you know, my mom's own personality and the things she wanted to do and the gifts that she had and the things that she gave up to be a mom, she did a great job because she tried to kind of balance her own needs with taking care of us kids.
Yes, that was my mom's experience too. My mom she always said it was the job that she was made for. But I just think about, you know, I'm not my mom. I have to be really clear about that with myself. I am not my mother, and my children are not me. I am my own person, and I have my own funny mix of talents and abilities and weaknesses. And so it really is, there is no one-size-fits-all for motherhood, just like there's no one-size-fits-all for people in general. So if there is a new mom out there, or even better, if there is a grandmother or grandfather out there who is concerned about his or her daughter in her new role as a mom, I would just encourage that grandparent to be very sensitive, to maybe set aside notions that they have calcified as truth for what a good mother or a good father, because fathers definitely suffer too, what that looks like, and to keep eyes peeled for just signs that they don't behave like themselves anymore. And, I mean, truthfully, like anybody, you can't drag someone into therapy or a psychiatrist's office or even their OB's office, but But just to listen and to be open-minded and honestly, the thing I wanted more than anything when I was going through my own spell was I just wanted somebody to love me the way that I am, the way that I'm suffering, even then to be open and ready to listen. That's the biggest thing. And to tell me that I wasn't the only one, that I wasn't weird or anything like that. Those were the hardest parts of going through that.
Absolutely, the isolation. Thank you, Jamie, for taking the time to call. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875. So what do you think about your role as a mom? What are you doing well, and where do you maybe think you're falling short? Because I think it's the honesty, and it's funny how few women will out themselves and talk about the ways that they maybe aren't reaching that ideal mother status. Another one of the true confessions that I read was a woman who was faking breast milk. So she was filling little bottles and labeling them breast milk so she could put them in the refrigerator at work and at her office at home so that when other women or mothers came by, they wouldn't judge her for having stopped breastfeeding. And so, you know, that is the kind of thing we do to keep up the image of having it all together. And would this idea of a homemaker's wage, a wage for housework, change the way we felt about the job of mothering? Because there is a lot of the emotion tied in, wanting to love and be loved, wanting to care for others. But what about the practicality parts? Because when we talk about economy of the home, there's a lot of just practical, pragmatic pieces to it. It's not glamorous. It's a job. And it's a daily job, you know, that you're cleaning up and tending to and getting the pets to the vet and getting the kids to the doctor and wiping up, you know, barf and getting up in the middle of the night. There's a lot of just pragmatic pieces, paying the bills, making sure that the yard is tended to. You know, it is a day-to-day job, 24/7. And so would that wage, that contribution, raise the status of this work? And think about what happens when you raise the status of this work, when you provide a wage, Social Security, and universal income for this work, it then in turn raises and esteems the other caregiver work, like teaching, like nursing, like elder care. And when all of those areas are more esteemed, more valued, compensated at a fair rate, our entire economy goes more smoothly, everyone benefits and does better. And when you have healthy women and children, you have a thriving society. So why wouldn't that be the first thing we'd talk about every Mother's Day? Where are we in compensating and valuing the work of mothers? You know, flowers are nice, a brunch is nice, a foot rub is fantastic, but how about getting on the front line of saying this work is more than just a sacrificial job for a mother or a wife or a woman, but it's a job that is essential to the world in which we live in? 805-781-3875. Hi, Becky, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. Well, first thing, I absolutely agree. I think if I stay at home and it is more than a 40-hour a week job. It is, you know, it is 24 hours a day is what it feels like.
And it is.
I think that any kind of compensation would be welcome and would, in a way, validate what we're all doing.
Mm-hmm.
And in that same vein, I have had to have very serious talks with my husband to tell him, and, you know, basically I've had to convince him that I cannot sustain a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week job without relief.
Mm-hmm.
And it is unfair that he goes to work, and when he comes home, his mentality has been in the past, well, I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
I can sit down and can kick my feet up, and the burden, the majority of the housework and the childcare is still on my shoulders in the evenings and in the mornings when the kids wake up and all weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've had to have a come to Jesus with him that I we are co-parents when you get off work, because I cannot be on all the time. It is completely unsustainable. And then I have in the past felt really guilty for wanting to just check out and leave and be gone for 3 or 4 hours and just exercising and connecting with friends. And thank God I have been able to work through that and not feel at all guilty. Mm-hmm. That connection with my mom friends, especially, where we can talk about how we're feeling about things and getting away and getting exercise, has done wonders for my attitude and just the feeling that I can come back refreshed and with perspective and that I'm taking care of myself in a way that I really didn't for the first 2 years of each of my children's lives. That it was, I felt utterly overwhelmed and like I had lost myself.
And I think that goes back to what I mentioned, that when we talk about being the stay-at-home parent, we assume that means 24/7 every day of the week, but it really means that we're taking on the primary homemaking role and that you do still need to get out and care for yourself so that you're better. And it's interesting, Becky, because my experience with when my kids were young, with my husband, that he would come home and he was the one that came home and jumped into it and loved being with the kids and would take them for bike rides. But for me, part of it was like, wait, the kids are great, but come home and pay attention to me. You know?
Exactly.
And so I felt, so we had to work on that piece, which is, you know, our relationship is primary to the success of this family. And mm-hmm. our kids can entertain themselves for 15, 20 minutes in the evening mm-hmm. so that we connect together. And I think that's where another struggle for couples is that even if the husband jumps in, then we're still not tending to the marriage. And so it's a lot of dancing and a lot of conversations.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think it's a constant, like I feel every maybe 6 months we have to sit down and talk about how our needs are being met and where we see where we're struggling and what we need to do better, because we do tend to get disconnected, you know, when it's been out of balance.
Absolutely. And it happens fast. Thank you for reminding me of that, Becky, because it is important to remind parents that it's not just how we divide the child labor, but also the labor of taking care of our children, but how we take care of our relationship as well. 805-781-3875. Barbara, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
My issue is being paid for having a salary mm-hmm. and then the benefits of Social Security mm-hmm. when you end up needing them. I don't think most women get married and stay home and realize that what that's going to mean to them down the road, that they are not getting any Social Security benefits down the road. So my idea is that we don't really need to make it as complicated as being a national issue about whether or not homemakers get paid. I think that can happen in each family. I think that it's true that women are out there spending money on groceries, that the family budgets for savings, and all of that, expenditure. I've never thought of this before, but I'm thinking now, why couldn't that come right out of that budget that is paid to the homemaker if she's willing? Of course, she would be willing to do that. So that, let's say that that $1,000 a month for groceries is paid to her as salary, and then she spends it on the groceries, or that $500 a month that is in savings, she takes that money and she puts it into their savings, and then on their taxes, they put down her job as housemaker.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think if there is a big enough solo salary in the family, that's a piece of it. I mean, it kind of reminds me a little bit of Desi and Lucy Arnaz and I Love Lucy, where she got a wife allowance, and I don't know if that's, because then it's still a power imbalance in the relationship. I think what we're looking at with the homemaker wages is that as a society, we recognize the importance of the economy of the family, and that gets compensated by the government, by the society that is saying we value family, we want the family unit to sustain, we realize that if families are stable, we have better mental health and well-being, we're willing to invest in families by offering and paying a homemaker's wage. So that's kind of the direction that I'm seeing. I mean, and in a lot of experiences, you know, the resource maker, the resource worker puts the money into the savings account, the joint savings account, and then the emotion worker draws on that to pay the bills. I mean, it kind of works that way if you're sharing one big pot. But I think really what I'm pushing towards is how do we revalue the work of homemaking in our society? Ellie, you're on the air. What's on your mind today?
Aline?
Is Eileen? Hi. You're Eileen. On the air. What's on your mind?
Am I on?
Yes, and can you turn down your radio? We've got about a minute to go.
Okay. Well, I just want to ask you to give recognition to nurses because I am basically a retired nurse. I still work kind of on call, but I think it's Nurses Week either this week or next. And, well, they're paid well now, but years ago they weren't. But I like the idea of paying domestic income of $1,000 or whatever a month to help so that a mother or father wouldn't have to be away from home 100% plus of the time. I was a single mother for many years, and it was hard. I'd rather have stayed at home with my sons to raise them. But,
yeah.
I worked at most of the time where I worked half-time or a little more so that I could spend more quality time with them.
And I think that's the struggle for mothers universally is, you know, I don't know if anyone really wants to be away from their children for unending hours week after week, that if, you know, given the opportunity, we want to be there to raise our children, to be the primary parent or the primary caregiver, but economically it's challenging. And for women who feel a sense of value working outside of the home, but does it have to be 40, 60, 80 hours a week? And that's, again, I think another conversation that we have down the road is it's not that we work. And this is a quote from Carol Burnett, not for me, but Carol Burnett, who was one of the original working moms. She said, it's not the fact that women work that gets us into trouble. It's how women are expected to work that gets us into trouble. And so let's have these conversations along with brunch and flowers and chocolate and whatever other goodies that you provide for mom on Sunday. Also talk about the value of this work to our economy and the fact that things would stop if women were not doing this work. And if things would fall apart without women, what will we do to compensate them to make sure we have the quality of life that we also enjoy? And this has been a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can listen to previous shows at KCBX. .org. You can podcast at Apple Podcasts, A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You can send me an email to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com or check out our Facebook page. As always, I appreciate you being a part of this conversation, supporting this community, and supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. Thank you.
inside your sleeve. Find your sisters and brothers who can hear all the truth in what you say. They can support you when you're wrong.